Inspire, inform, and connecting a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Welcome to the show. Next, we'll head to the NASDAQ Entrepreneurial Center in San Francisco with Thuy Vu.
Hey there. Thanks so much. And welcome to Scale the Wall, brought to you by NASDAQ Private Market. Stay private on your own terms. You can learn more by going to npm.com. With us today is René Lacerte, CEO and founder of Bill.com. It's one of the nation's largest business payment networks. There are about 1 million members, and payments amount to more than $30 billion a year. René, nice to see you.
Great to see you, Thuy.
Well, this is essentially a B2B payments platform, right? It consolidates and automates data and transactions into a personalized cloud dashboard. Am I right on that?
Yeah. So what we do is we dramatically simplify how businesses pay their bills and get paid by their customers. So as a part of that, all of a business's customers and vendors end up joining our network to get paid or to pay their bills. So it's great.
So then what made you decide to do this? I know you have a long history in finance and transactional companies.
So, you know, my dad and granddad each had 5 and 7 businesses. And as a kid, I always heard that cash is king. And this was dinner table conversation, the banter on a Saturday night. And it was always stretch out the payables and pull in the receivables. And what I learned when I started my first company, PayCycle, was that I didn't have any tools. And here I just left Intuit. I'd been there for 5 years. I'd built consumer payment solutions for them. And I built all these great solutions, and none of them worked for me to actually run the business the way Dad and Granddad had talked about. So as I was growing PayCycle, it was probably year 3 or 4.
And what was PayCycle again?
PayCycle was an online platform for payroll. Okay. So we grew to about 100,000 customers, small businesses, before Intuit acquired the company in 2009.
Well, not bad. Not a so bad exit.
It was a great exit. And great for the employees, great for the customers. It was, I think, you know, now they've continued to grow it, and it's a significant part of their payroll business at Intuit. And so, you know, that day-to-day managing of cash was very painful, and I started thinking about the technology. And when, you know, I started PayCycle, we only thought about technology, the internet being, you know, anytime, anywhere software, not really a cloud. Mm-hmm. And the difference being that with the cloud, I can create a custom experience for you compared to somebody else using the same data, the same database, right, and the same software. So all of those vendors and customers that are in our network, those 1 million plus, they get a much different experience than the customers who use us to pay their customers, their vendors, or get paid by their customers.
Well, and it makes sense given that today people want to have access from multiple devices, right? And being on the cloud allows you to do that.
Exactly. So yeah. It's multiple devices and multiple permissions, right? So in a business, you might want to say your employees have an approval access, but then the payer has all access, or the vendor has a different access. So that's all the stuff that we work on, is to make those payments happen electronically.
So then who are your targeted companies? Are they bigger companies, mid-sized, small businesses?
Well, so one of the things that I've always, having grown up with Dad and Granddad in small businesses, I've always enjoyed helping small business. And right, having worked at Intuit, there's just indoctrination that did do a great job of helping you understand how to serve small businesses. So we serve all businesses. People don't think about this often. When you think about QuickBooks, for example, being a small business company, there are lots of public companies on the QuickBooks platform. Well, at Bill.com, we have 20% of our customers have less than $100,000 a year in revenue. So that's a really small business. And yet 40% have over $1 million a year in revenue. And we have public companies that are on it. So we kind of span the gamut. We try to help everybody that has this pain point, which is pretty much every business. Every business is using this manual paper-based driven process of filing cabinets and sticky notes and losing, you know, paper documents all over the place. Yeah. And we take care of that, right? And so any size business really is what we're focused on. And it's just, do they use the, you know, have the same pain point that we're solving for?
So your father was an entrepreneur, your grandfather, and you are. What does entrepreneurship mean to you?
You know, I was thinking about that, the other day and talking with some friends. And the way I describe it is when you see a problem and you make something out of nothing. Right, you just make the solution out of nothing. Like, so I understood, I solved this problem, then I created the solution, and then as part of that, you know, solution, you end up bringing customers and, you know, a tremendous amount of relief from whatever pain you're solving them for, and then you end up creating a great culture that employees like to work at. So to me, it is kind of 3 components: identifying and solving the problem, creating a solution that customers love, and then creating a work environment that employees enjoy as well.
All right. I'm Tui Vu, broadcasting from the NASDAQ Entrepreneurial Center in San Francisco. This is Scale the Wall, brought to you by NASDAQ Private Market. Stay private on your own terms. Learn more at npm.com. My guest today is Renee Lassert, founder and CEO of Bill.com. So what was the worst job you had growing up?
Well, you know, so I don't know if it, I've always enjoyed work. Like I've been one of those kids that was just, was never lazy. I was always doing something.
You never had a bad job though, where you just wish,
I was going to say it was a hard job. Uh-huh. My first job worked in a clothing store. And I was young, I was maybe 15 and, had a big warehouse in the back. And that summer they had me actually, take all the clothing and all the stuff in the warehouse, take it off the shelves and clean everything. There was a tremendous amount of dust. So I would come home and I was black with soot, basically.
From cleaning clothing?
There was a lot of dust, right, in the warehouse, right? It was in Florida, right?
Yeah.
And I'd have to sweep out a lot of jeans, right? Mm-hmm. So you're sweeping off the jeans and just creating dust everywhere. You'd just be surprised how much dust you collected. So, but it was a great job. I enjoyed, I learned a lot about, I also got to sell. That was the morning job. When people came in the afternoon, I got to do some selling. So it was a great job, but that was probably not the most fun to get dirty and climb, scale a different type of wall, right?
Right.
Get the jeans down and clean them out and go to the next rack and stuff like that.
But that taught you how to scale the wall.
Exactly.
So that job and other jobs you've had in the past, what would you say are some of the stepping stones that got you to where you are now?
I had a teacher in high school that was extremely powerful, motivational, inspiring. And his name was Mr. Armstrong. He wrote a book called Sounder. And he had two quotes on either side of his desk in the front of the classroom. And one of the quotes was from Hesiod, and it said, "Before the gates of excellence, the high gods have placed sweat." And the other quote was from Euripides that said, "If you do only what's required of you, you are a slave. The moment you do more, you're a free man." And so those two things, I think, have always been at the cornerstone of my success. I've always been willing to work hard, do that extra bit of effort, and I've always wanted to do more than what was asked of me by either my investors, or my customers, or my employees, or my family. I always want to do more because I want to be the one who's at choice with the decision. So I would say, I think that's, it's a little bit different question, the answer, but that's kind of what came to mind when you asked the question. So.
Well, what kind of boss would you say you are? If I was your employee, what do you think I would be saying about you?
I think people feel that I'm, if we look at our values for the company, which we take a lot of time to make sure employees, when they're being hired, understand them and that they identify with them. One of them is humble. Another one is authentic, fun, passionate, and dedicated. And so consistently what we hear from our employee surveys, we do them every quarter, that is the environment that people feel that they're in, that the culture is actually very strong at the company. And so I think at the core of that is the authenticity, right? Just being very clear and open. And when you have problems, recognize them and own them and make sure that you're going to have fun solving it. Make sure that you're passionate about what you do. Don't be bragging, be humble, right? Those are all things that I think are core to not just me, but the company. And it's fun to watch a company grow. And actually what was interesting about those values is we had a set when we started, and then about 3 or 4 years ago, we decided to do a refresh, and that's what came back. And it felt very natural for everybody.
So that's kind of a segue into what I want to ask you next, which is, what are the three best pieces of advice you can offer to an aspiring entrepreneur or business owner?
Yeah, so there's a book that I think I left for the team here, that Patrick Lencioni, a famous business author, it's called The Four Obsessions of Extraordinary Executives. And in the book, he really kind of talks about four things that an executive needs to be obsessed about. And the first is building a cohesive team. I've been doing this over 17 years now, I would say it's not just a cohesive team, it's a high-performing team, right? But that team, that's the first thing that you have to be obsessed about. You have to always be focusing on do I have the right team today? And you have to be willing to accept that the team needs change and you may not have the right team 2, 3, 4 years from now. So that's the first thing. And then communication. The other three obsessions are all around communication. Communicate, over-communicate, and have systems to actually help you with communication. And I think we forget as entrepreneurs, you have this passion, you have this vision. You forget that nobody else necessarily has that same passion and vision. And so things you take for granted need to be said over and over and over again. And I think those would kind of be my, I'd say get the book, read it, and pay attention to that. Some really great learning in there.
That makes sense. I mean, in business as in life, right? You can't over communicate sometimes.
Yeah, you really can't. And it's something that we all forget, you know, how important it is to make sure that we're understanding what others are saying, as well as others understanding us.
All right. And real quickly, I know that you chill out by running, you ski with your sons, and baking. Are you a good baker?
Oh, yeah, I love baking. Yeah.
Really?
Whenever we're on vacation, the cousins, everybody's like, can you make your cookies? Like, strawberry cookies are kind of my focus. So
you brought us a book, but not cookies?
Yeah,
what happened here, Renee?
Next time I will come back. Happy to bring you a batch of cookies.
All right, stay put. We'll come back and talk some more with Renee Lassert about how he scaled the wall when he faced obstacles and challenges. Scale the Wall is brought to you by NASDAQ Private Market. Stay private on your own terms. Visit npm.com. I'm Thuy Vu, and this is Business Rockstars.
Message and data rates may apply.
Earning your degree from one of the top business schools in the country might sound impossible to fit into your workload. But what if there were a business degree that furthered your career and gave you access to world-renowned faculty, leaders, and mentors, all on your schedule? One that opened doors to some of the most influential CEOs, tech companies, law firms, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. And what if you could earn that degree in as little as 16 months, 100% online? To find out more, text NET to 79645. That's NET to 79645. Start your online MBA, information management, or business analytics master's program from the W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University today. Learn more about the W.P. Carey Business Graduate Programs online. Text NET to 79645. That's NET to 79645.
Having a hard time.
Hello, I'm Thuy Vu, broadcasting from the NASDAQ Entrepreneurial Center in San Francisco. This is Scale the Wall, brought to you by NASDAQ Private Market. Stay private on your own terms. You can get more information by going to npm.com. Running a business isn't for the faint of heart. Entrepreneurs and small business owners always face challenges. And when that happens, they need to scale the wall. We'll discuss the hurdles they've encountered and how they overcame them. Today, I'm joined by Renee Lassert, CEO and founder of Bill.com. The company automates payables and receivables for companies of all sizes. Currently, there are about 1 million members, with transactions topping $30 billion a year. Renee, great to have you here.
Thuy, it's great to be here as well.
Tell us a story about the time, about any time, where you had to go against conventional wisdom in order to move your company forward.
I think the best example is probably the most challenging example, right, for folks to think about. So if we go back to 2008, there's a recession that's going on, but nobody really knows it yet. Data always lags, right? And there was a presentation that Sequoia is famous for. They put this presentation out in the fall, maybe September. It was before Halloween, and they had, you know, the death spiral, you know, and they were talking about, you know, that the recession was going to be worse, and that if you didn't have a plan in place to actually navigate through this, you know, economic times over the next 12 to 18 months, you were going to be caught off guard and you might go out of business. And so anyways, while I was not a Sequoia company, I did get a copy of the deck, and I read the deck, and the data actually made sense to me. A lot of the data that they pulled from public sources resonated with things I've been reading about. And so from within 2 weeks of seeing that presentation, I called a board meeting and we made a decision. We were 26 employees at the time. We made a decision that we would lay off 40% of the team, which is a very hard thing to do, right? These are people that we had just grown in the last year. We had, you know, probably gone from 10 to 26, so we'd grown a lot in that year. So all new hires. The company was maybe 2 years old. We'd raised a round of capital. But when
it's
I looked,
a huge reduction, 40%.
Huge. And when you looked at the math, we were going to be out of capital, which is normal, right? Normal cycle would be you raise money every 12 to 18 months when you're young. Our 18-month period would have been June of 2009. So recession hits really in the fall of 2008. This is the fall of 2008. And because we did that change, I had capital through really February of 2010. So another 8 months or 7 months. And I raised in the fall of 2009. So the timing worked out well, but it was to let go of folks and to do it in a way that we've actually hired a few folks back, but to do it in a way that after we actually had the company meeting, we talked about it, we shared the data, we shared how I was thinking about it. We got together, we cried, and we ate pizza together, right? I mean, we actually had a really, it was not a negative experience. It wasn't a great experience, but we actually did something that actually became part of, I think, the culture where we treated people with
dignity and respect.
And we went through the data, and they're like, you got to do what you got to do. We get it. And so it was not easy, but that was, you know, that would have been the hardest example of kind of scaling the wall that that nobody ever wants to face, you know.
And maybe even before people thought you needed to scale the wall, but there was something nagging inside you that said, we need to do it now.
Yeah. Well, and it was from a emotional perspective, this is getting more personal, but my dad passed away in September 2008, and my wife's father passed away in January 2009. So we're in a four-month period where there's just a lot of, to take, it was an additional risk for me, but it was something that was, hard to do. And I think that's one of the things about being an entrepreneur is if you're not willing to make the hard decisions, you shouldn't do the job, right? And there are lots of hard decisions every day. Usually they're not this dramatic, but you have to be willing and think that you're willing to make those decisions and understand how you communicate in a way that actually helps your customers, your employees, and your shareholders.
Looking back, you had PayCycle and now you have Bill.com. Looking back, though, is there anything that you wish you had done differently or done better?
Yeah, so I think, there's a book, the Patrick Lencioni book, where the four obsessions of extraordinary executives. And the first obsession is really about building a cohesive management team. And I would say that, I would add the words, high-performing management team. And so everybody always says, I've heard this actually from my outside counsel, general counsel, the first time I heard it was, look, you know what VCs say about the best time to fire the CEO? And I said, no. He said, the first time they think of it, right? And it's a little bit harsh, right? Mm. But if you ever have doubts on any person on your team being the right fit for you, the right fit for the company, then you really need to think hard about it. And I think that's, over 17 years, I think that's one of the things I've learned is, how do I think about building a high-performing team? How do I make sure that, everybody can do their part for when they're with us, but when they're not, they can leave and go do something better, and I can find somebody else that can do what I need to get to the next level. So I think that's probably the thing that I probably, you're always learning how to do that better.
I'm Tui Vu, broadcasting from the NASDAQ Entrepreneurial Center in San Francisco. This is Scale the Wall, where we talk about hard realities and failures in business. It's brought to you by NASDAQ Private Market. Stay private on your own terms. You can learn more by going to npm.com. And here with us is Rene Lacert, founder and CEO of Bill.com. What's the biggest risk you would say you've taken with your company?
The biggest risk is actually focus, right? I mean, Steve Jobs talked about this, that it's deciding what not to do that's probably more important than deciding what to do, right? Just making sure that you have a focused effort on what you're doing. And so, when you have lots of opportunities in front of you, telling people to go away. We've actually said no to partnerships because I didn't think it was the right partnership at the right time. And they're brand name partners, really big partners, some of the biggest financial service companies in the world. And I've said no because it's not the right fit. That feels risky at the time that you're doing it, at least.
No regrets about saying no to any of them?
No. We're having too much fun doing what we're doing, right?
Okay. So. What are the three biggest lessons to learn in dealing with the challenges of starting or growing a business?
Putting in place a culture that works for you, the entrepreneur, it sounds selfish, but it's critical, right? This is going to be your heart and soul that you're putting into this company to solve problems for customers and for employees. And if the culture doesn't match you, it's not something that's going to feel right for you down the line. And so one of the ways that I feel like I'm able to remain energized and motivated about what we're doing is that we have a culture that others love being a part of. And so culture is probably the biggest asset that any company has that people often don't talk about. I mean, all the deals and partnerships and customers, those are phenomenal assets. But the culture is actually what gets things done every day. So it's the people. And so I'd say, first and foremost, understand yourself, put a culture in place, and then test against that culture when you're hiring. Make sure that when you're hiring somebody, ask them the question, these are the values we have. Do you identify with them? Show me how you have identified with them in the past. Those are probably the most important things to do as an entrepreneur, because you have a great team, all the things are going to change that you think you're going to do, but the team's going to be together, and that's what matters.
That is true, because you may have a great product, a great mission, but if you don't have the right people in place and a miserable working environment, none of that is going to get accomplished.
Yep. Just like at home, right?
And that's why you bake cookies.
You bet.
To keep everybody happy.
You bet.
Renee Lesert, CEO and founder of Build.com. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Twee.
All right, join us every Friday as we scale the wall, brought to you by NASDAQ Private Markets. Stay private on your own terms. Learn more at npm.com. I'm Twee Vu, and this is Business Rockstars.
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated, what other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to answer your questions. And if you need legal advice, their network of independent attorneys can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse. Go to LegalZoom.com today to start building your own future the right way. To save even more, enter ROCKSTAR in the referral box at checkout.
Inspire, inform, and connecting a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Welcome to the show. Now, female founders with Laurel Mintz.
Inspire, inform, and connecting a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Laurel Mintz, and this is Female Founders on Business Rockstars. I'm here with Mika Onishi, CEO and founder of Up2Good. Mika, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So obviously, Up2Good, we would assume that it's something in the nonprofit world, but tell us a little bit more about the brand.
Yes, we are Up2Good. We're not up to no good sometimes, only sometimes. We are a social enterprise, and we are in the business of doing good. We are a video and storytelling platform for doing good together. So I'm sure, you know, like all of us, we've watched, you know, documentaries, social change documentaries, or viral videos online that inspire us, and you feel all of these emotions, mm-hmm. but a lot of times you don't act on them.
Right.
You know, and so I've had a lot of those moments. My co-founder, Emmy, has also had a lot of those moments, and we wanted to create a place where we can address that specific moment so that those feelings that we feel don't go in vain. So basically, what you can do on our platform is anybody can come on our platform and create a social impact campaign around a video of any length. So it could be a theatrical length documentary film to a selfie video that you take on your phone, so long as it has some potential for impact and inspiration.
So does it have to be a nonprofit brand, or can for-profit brands do fundraising for nonprofits
as
well? Yes,
it could be anything. It's not just for nonprofits, though, you know, obviously there's a lot of nonprofit beneficiaries, but it really could be an individual that wants to do good within their community. It could be a business that wants to make an impact and put some messaging out there that's inspirational.
Well, you know, that's how you and I met, right? So we were doing our taste salons, our community of women here in Los Angeles, and we always have a nonprofit beneficiary, mm-hmm. and we thought, you know what, we're just not doing a great job of telling their story because it was such an insulated community. Mm-hmm. And so we talked about putting it on your platform to get the message of those incredible nonprofits out there. And that's really what you've done best. Talk to us about those calls to action and why it's so important for brands, nonprofit and for-profit, to get on your platform so that there is something that's actionable in terms of their messaging?
Yes. So we have four actions that you can pick and choose. You can pick all of them, or you can just pick one or two of them and associate it to the video story that you're putting out to configure your campaign. And so the four actions are fund it, mm-hmm. sign it, promise it, and share it. So the fund it button is a crowdfunding button. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure a lot of us are familiar with what that is. You know, it's Kickstarter, Indiegogo, GoFundMe.
Which is so much more mainstream now than ever before. In fact, the SEC has already created regulations.
Yes.
I think it's through the Jobs Act, right?
Yes.
Incredible. And so now it's not considered alternative funding. It's really very much more mainstream, which I think has been pretty helpful for you.
Yes. I mean, I think it really set the stage for, you know, we don't have to educate people
right.
so much about what crowdfunding is.
Right.
So fund it. Ours is a little bit unique. We have the basic functionalities of what you would expect from any other crowdfunding platform. But what we do is we support up to 5 funded beneficiaries per campaign. Mm. So this kind of opens up a lot of possibilities for what your campaign can look like. So for example, I might be a documentary filmmaker and I want to continue to tell the stories that, you know, are important and stories that matter. You know, so I might choose to kind of fund myself, you know, and I say, hey, you know, fund me as, you know, kind of an arts patronage platform, mm-hmm. if you will. Fund me so that I can continue to tell these stories, right? So it's not kind of paywalling it and saying, pay me first and then watch it. You want to get as many people as possible to hear impactful messages. So that's one model. And then that same filmmaker can fund themselves, fund him or herself, and then also pick a nonprofit or two or three to also fund.
To distribute that. Well,
yeah.
Too.
And so it could be, mm-hmm. in that case, there'll be 4 beneficiaries in that particular campaign.
So why did you come up with this concept? What was that moment where you were like, I need to be up to good?
So I was watching, before Up to Good, I was the president and publisher of Click Media Group. And okay. so Click Media Group is most known for a very popular fashion and celebrity website called Who What Wear. Mm-hmm. And so in that role, my job was to help large advertisers, fashion brands to connect with their target audience in unique and creative ways. Mm-hmm. So instead of just putting up banners on our website, what we would do is create native content, you know, custom content.
Which is so mainstream now. Before you heard native and you
exactly.
didn't know what that was
yeah,
now.
We didn't coin that word, but we were doing that.
I think
that.
You should still own it.
Thank you.
You certainly were. I mean, you've done such a great job.
Thank
you. Were constantly in my Facebook feed.
Oh,
and
thank
the content you.
You
created was really unique. So you clearly are very set up to be successful with this.
Thank you.
But what was that moment where you were like, okay, I've done the for-profit.
Mm-hmm.
Now I want to work on something that has more meaning to me.
Right. And so I was watching a documentary specifically called Forks Over Knives.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a food documentary. And I was a former carnivore, you know, still a foodie, but was completely had a different way of eating, you know, prior to watching this. And I watched it and it blew my mind. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I gotta change how I eat. And food is such a central point, I feel, like a gateway to so many different issues that are going on in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's sustainability, climate change, to corruption, to health, medicine, you know, so many different issues. So that kind of set me on this journey of watching a documentary every single night before I went to bed.
Oh my goodness.
And so you have, so that in contrast with what I was doing during the day, you know, celebrities, fashion, it's fun.
It was a total disconnect for
you. It was
you.
A disconnect. And
so
also
watching these documentary films really just set you on the path to creating Up to Good. I
correct.
Love that. Inspire, inform, and connecting a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Laurel Mintz, and this is Female Founders on Business Rockstars. I'm here again with Mika Onishi from Up to Good, and you were just sharing your story about watching documentaries every single night. That would just rip my heart out. Were you just crying every single night?
Yeah, I would cry, or I'd be enraged, or I would feel
emotion.
Something strong.
Mm-hmm.
But then it felt like in vain. With food, I could change my own eating habits. But there were a lot of content that I was watching that I'm like, well, what do I do with this?
Mm.
And then I also felt bad because I could have gone online, look, you know, talked to more people, researched how I can best help, but I didn't. You know, my life was very busy. In the meantime, at my day job at Who What Wear, I was helping advertisers connect with their target audience with social media, influencers, content, custom content, and a call to action. Mm. And that's something that we always, you know, looked for. And so
because clicks for click's sake are just that. They're just clicks. There's really no benefit to it. But what action are you asking the consumer or the donor to take?
Right.
Actually makes so much sense now that you tell me that story. Was there one specific moment where you were like, I can't do this anymore. I need to work on my own project?
You know, it was kind of a gradual build. And, you know, but as I kind of got more entrenched in my personal life watching this type of content, it just was gnawing at me that even though what I was doing at Who What Wear was so amazing, it was such an amazing experience, you know, with the team, with an incredible team that we have, and they're still going, mm-hmm. you know, and building that into an amazing company. You know, I'm very proud of that. I thought that, you know, it was time for me to step away and do my own thing and bring a lot of that kind of experience that I built out into the social impact space. And I'm actually an outsider. I'm just an average person. I don't have a nonprofit
hardly
background.
Hardly average. And you built a very successful company before this one, so let's not be too coy about that. But you are really an empowered woman, and you took what was really unique in a fashion and retail space, mm-hmm. and you're applying it to a whole new industry.
That's, yeah.
Has being a woman, being a female founder, impacted that decision? Because most nonprofits, as mm-hmm. we all know, mm-hmm. are led by or founded by females. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense for you to kind of marry that fashion element and the nonprofit piece. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the nonprofit piece is not mm-hmm. as fashion mm-hmm. Focused, mm-hmm. but has being a female impacted that process for you? Or how has it?
You know, to be honest, it hasn't. You know, I've never been one to, I'm a huge supporter of women just, you know, going out there and owning it and killing it. Big proponent of that, but it's never really occurred to me like I'm a woman, so da 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 da. You know, it's like, if anything, I come from Japan. I'm originally from Tokyo, mm-hmm. and in that culture, it's, you know, it's a lot more difficult for women to have opportunities in their career and entrepreneurialism. And I grew up with that. And then I also did some cross border business between Japan and the United States earlier in my career. So I really have seen the contrast of all the opportunities that are afforded mm-hmm. here for women, even though it's still, there's a lot of room to grow. I see it more as kind of the world is our oyster here, mm-hmm. as opposed to the lack that sometimes women feel. And so I've never been like, I've never felt held back because I was a woman. If anything, it's like because, you know, there is a minority of women, you know, in doing startups and stuff like that.
So it's actually empowered
you empowering.
More than been a limiting force. Well, clearly yeah. you're one of the women that are killing it out there in the space. You have built such a successful company with Who What Wear, and now this is your second venture, correct? Mm-hmm. What has been the most impactful thing for you in building the second brand?
The impactful thing. I mean, I think that it's just the passion that I have in wanting to make a difference, mm-hmm. and seeing an opportunity and just having that vision so clearly. I think, you know, as I mentioned earlier, just having experienced that feeling when you watch something really impactful, a story that matters, that's really what motivated me to want to do this. And I just want to have storytellers, to have a platform to be able to do that even more effectively.
I mean, and the narrative is so important. It's important in for-profit brands and nonprofit brands.
Yes.
I love the way that you're doing it. So as of right now, it's just you and your sister, mm-hmm. correct?
Correct.
But you're going to start hiring. I mean, you guys are expanding rapidly at this point. How many people were at Who What Wear when you left?
I want to say about 50 people, but they've grown since then.
So now having had that experience, who is the next hire for Up to Good? Now that you've seen the progression, because you were there in the very beginning mm-hmm. and you saw it grow, mm-hmm. what do you think is the next proper hire for you?
I think the next proper hire for us is actually going to be a technology person. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had an incredibly supportive technology team, but we outsourced it. Mm-hmm. And so we do feel like it's time for us to, you know, have an in-house technology leader that we can really count on and grow.
I think that makes a whole lot of sense. And the great news is that now that we're here in Silicon Beach, there's so much more talent
yes.
than ever before.
Yes.
So I'm sure you'll be able to hand pick the right fit for you.
We hope
someone
so.
Who has that same passion.
Yes.
Mika, thank you so much for
thank
being with us here today.
Me.
Inspire, inform, and connecting a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Laurel Mintz, and this is Female Founders on Business Rockstars.
It's amazing but true. When it comes to one of America's biggest household expenditures, healthcare, a lot of people think they've got no choice. People are used to thinking we have to do it this way, but they don't. Yes, you have the freedom to choose an alternative with your healthcare. It's MediShare, and it costs way less than the alternatives. The typical family saves $500 a month, not a year, a month. And if you're single, this can save you a lot too. And let's face it, a big reason MediShare is 400,000 people strong, it just works. They've shared over $3 billion in medical bills, so they can help share your needs too. Joining MediShare for so many people is one of those things that makes you say, why didn't I do this before? So yes, the time has come for something better. Look into joining MediShare and see why so many people are opting out of the old way and into the new. Why not look into this? Just call 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE. 844-91-BIBLE.
This is your Tech It Out Minute with Mark Saltzman, brought to you by Asus.
March is a big month for sleep as we spring forward the clocks to daylight saving time this month, and it was World Sleep Day on March the 15th. So what better time to talk about tech that can help you fall asleep faster and wake up feeling more refreshed? The Philips Somnio Sleep and Wake Up Light is a perfect bedside companion as it helps your body prepare to drift off to sleep feeling relaxed with light-guided breathing techniques. And when it's time to wake up, a personalized sunrise simulation gradually increases from soft morning red through orange to bright yellow light, and with optional sound to gently prepare your body for waking up. And it's scientifically proven to help you wake up more naturally and refreshed. The Somnio Sleep and Wake Up Light costs $199, and more info is at usa.philips.com. Once again, that's the Somnio Sleep and Wake Up Light from Philips.
That was your Tech It Out Minute, brought to you by Asus.
Inspire, inform, and connecting a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Welcome to the show. Let's check in with Mark Lack.
So how do you get your entrepreneurial venture off the ground and into sustainable flight? Jason Sullivan, Serial Entrepreneur, is our guest to help answer that question. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. So is this a plane analogy? What are we talking about here?
This is a Top Gun analogy. Okay. My mentor, and you know him very well, Max Carey Jr., chief strategist of the Outback Steakhouse Corporation, grew him from one store to 2,000. I would call that sustainable flight.
Yeah, shout out to Max Carey,
our mentor. Absolutely, we're absolutely okay. Max Carey.
Yeah.
All right, so he was a Top Gun fighter pilot as well, the real deal, not the Tom Cruise, right? The guy that actually did it.
The real Top Gun.
The real deal. So there's a thing called, listen, all businesses, entrepreneurs, ventures, we're trying to get them off the ground, right? We're all trying to our own new design. I mean, look at Leonardo da Vinci, right? He had all these different sketches, the helicopter with the thing that you could pedal and it would spiral, and all, right? We've got all these different, we're all trying to create our own designs, right? But as an airplane flies, there's a specific design to have that airplane fly. Now, there's a bunch of different designs of airplanes and different wings and airfoils and things of that nature, but it's the same basic principles.
And this is why this is the same basic principles that allow a business to succeed or crash and burn or not even get liftoff.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And it doesn't matter the size of the business, if it's small, medium, large, enterprise, or Fortune 500.
Yeah.
Okay. A lot of companies, even 9 out of 10 of the large enterprise companies, are failing because they're failing to begin with intelligence, right? Mm. You have to have the intelligence before you can start to formulate a good, sound strategy based on that intel to where you can formulate a good design like that airfoil, which will get you the result that you need to gain air and gain sustainable flight.
So it starts with intelligence, and then the intelligence allows you to create the strategy.
Absolutely. You cannot have strategy without intelligence. I can say it over and over again, right? A lot of people try to do it. They go, hey, this is a great idea. Let's do it. Mark, this is fantastic. Give me some money. Yeah. We'll go raise some cash. We'll blow a bunch of money on marketing dollars, and we'll throw it out there, and then boom.
Where do we identify and find this accurate, proven intelligence, and then how do we turn that into a strategy?
I know the first place to start. Your customers, right?
So get the intel from them about what the demand is, what are their pains, fears, struggles, frustrations, and then find out how they would ideally like to have that solved for them. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. Okay. Like in our consulting businesses, and we can talk about that as well with Max. I'm a partner with Max. And the first thing that we'll do is we'll go and talk to the client, right? And then we'll ask them We'll interview them, first of all, inside the senior level executives, the people that are, you know, the VPs of sales and marketing, things like that. We'll interview them
so we can get intel. Prescribe.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then we'll do the same thing. We'll say, we want to talk to your current customers. We want to talk to your lost customers. Right? We want to talk to your wish list customers. Yeah. We want to talk to the RFPs, the request for proposals that you went after that you weren't able to get. We want to talk to those people, right?
So
we want to find out why.
That's how you're acquiring this intel.
Absolutely. You've got to have your ear to the road. If you're going to fly over a mission, back to the Top Gun analogy, if you're going to fly over a mission, you would never do it without intelligence. First thing you would want to know is, where are the guns?
Yeah, they're pointing at you. I'm not flying over.
And who's the good shooters?
Yeah.
And how far can they shoot, right? And you want that intel, and what are your targets, all that kind of good stuff. So you've got to do that with your business. Begin with the intelligence.
But once we've done that, how do we get that and formulate that into a strategy?
So what we do is we interview the customers, lost customers, lost prospects, wish list prospects. If you want to learn how to get a client or land a client, ask them, right? Simply ask them, hey, what are you guys looking for? Things of that nature. So once you're doing this, record these interviews, right? Have them transcribed, right?
Like that. Okay.
And then call back through them, read through them thoroughly. Yeah. When I say call, that means read thoroughly through them, right? Take your markers, highlight all the gold nuggets. Do the same thing with the internal,
you'll
right?
You'll find congruency and stuff that's going to go, oh, here's the pattern.
With your team. You interview your own team, right? And, or maybe if you get a third party to do it, right? And keep it in confidence to where they can throw you under the bus if they want to. But you want to know that information, right? If you're failing, if I'm failing as a CEO, I want to know about it, right? Don't necessarily want to know who told them, but I want to know about it, right? But the bottom line is, get that information. It's important. You have a fiduciary responsibility to learn where you're failing, period, right? So get that information internally and externally. Read the, have it transcribed, call through it, and compare internal versus external. The customer said this and thought this and told us this. We believed that this was the case.
Yeah. Completely off.
Okay, near miss.
Sometimes, yeah.
Right? So we want to find those connects and disconnects. And as you're doing that and going through this process, I promise you, you will have eureka after eureka.
Okay.
And then you'll start to formulate your strategy.
And how do you actually sustain that flight?
Well, if you end up failing, it's probably because you have a disconnect now with your intelligence. Mm-hmm. So again, this
so
is a cycle.
So we stop doing the basics.
We stop doing the basics. Get back to the basics. Okay. Ask the right questions, right?
Okay.
Get your ear to the railroad and start
figuring
out.
So have surveys as a habit and a ritual within our business.
Absolutely.
What helped us succeed in the beginning oftentimes will help us succeed. We need to keep practicing those things.
Yes, absolutely. And a lot of companies make that mistake. First off, 9 out of 10 companies are starting new products and new services without ever talking to their customers.
Yeah.
Huge mistake.
No.
These are big companies spending millions of dollars, okay, in doing that.
Yeah.
But that 1% that are really taking off, they're doing a good job at getting the intelligence.
Okay.
And they're doing a good job at keeping the intelligence. You talked about hitting what I call the fifth ring of hell, being on hold where you hit the five, hit 9,453, all this
just
type
to get
of
to
stuff.
A human.
Have you guys ever called a business and somebody actually answered the phone? How did that
it's
make
rare.
You feel?
Yeah. And ironically, it's the small businesses run by the mom and pops in the boutique stores that are the ones that have a human that answer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think a lot of the times small businesses can actually do a better job in regards to quality over a billion-dollar company, even though that should not be the case.
Even if you're a big company, you want to almost seem and feel like a smaller company, right? Mm. Because you feel like you're connected. The customer wants you to reach out to them nowadays. The landscape is changing completely on what we expect and what our expectations are. They're growing. We have higher expectations. Now people are going on social media because they figure it's a better way to get a response, and they expect a faster response when they post to you on your social media. They expect it because now it's out in the public, right?
Yeah.
Remember?
Like, people can
if you
see
don't
that,
have any, if
back.
You don't have any leverage with anybody, how do you do it? You create leverage.
Yeah.
Now that company knows that everybody is seeing it, so they want to respond. Remember what I said about that circle of leverage?
Yeah.
Same concept there,
okay.
Right? So, yeah, get in there and talk to people, get the information, start to formulate your sound strategies, and make sure that you're stepping through this process to where you can start to get sustainable flight. And when you get up and going, do some touch and goes, right?
Yeah.
That's the whole purpose.
Yeah.
Do some touch and goes, hit the ground, let's test it. Oh, it's a little wobbly, let's adjust it. Boom, do it again a couple times. And then all of a sudden when you feel like you're going in a good place, then go to your 30,000 foot, altitude. Okay?
So that's the key right there is figuring out how you can actually ultimately test things and get feedback. Jason, it's been a pleasure, brother.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Great to see you.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
This information is given with the understanding that the host nor Business Rockstars is engaged in rendering legal, accounting, business, or other professional advice. Since the details of your situation are unique, you should additionally seek the advice and services of a competent professional.